You're listening to the sounds of Mars, as recorded by Perseverance, the Mars rover. Perseverance is performing 250 million miles away, in temperatures as low as minus 153 degrees Celsius, operating smoothly, with Castrol's liquid engineering in its veins and mechanisms. Castrol is proud to have been chosen by NASA, having worked in space for over 60 years. And everything we do in space goes into everything we do here on Earth. In this podcast series, we wanted to explore how advanced some places are on our own planet, places with machines that need similar Castrol products to those needed on Mars. We meet people and their machines who perform under some of our planet's most extreme conditions on land, sea, and air. People who undertake some of the most challenging missions as part of their job, every day.
Okay, my name is Richard Smith, and I'm the principal mechanical engineer at a company called Onyx. We provide world-class wind turbine monitoring and engineering solutions. It's quite an unusual environment. You can be sailing out to sea for a couple of miles. All of a sudden, you start to come across these huge structures protruding out of the seabed. Nacelle, despite the fact that we have to be in there to do work, these environments are not really designed to be ergonomic locations. Bits of bracketry, bolts sticking out. Very often the floors aren't flat and are actually sloped. One scenario where it feels very unusual is when you're climbing down the turbines at night. You might have quite high levels of wind and rain, and you're climbing down, and that does feel very strange because you're climbing from somewhere that you can't really look up and see to somewhere below that you know is there, but all around you, all you can see is just endless darkness. Some of the turbines might be mounted in maybe 30 meters of water, and then that's sunk into the seabed, and then you've got 100 meters or so of protruding tower from the top. So actually the motion in the top can be quite pronounced. Pretty much one of my first days offshore was at a particular farm that had this device fitted to the boat that was there to enable you to get off the boat and onto the turbine far easier. And it was this device that reached out from the bow of the boat and sort of grabbed the turbine. And then it learnt the motion of the waves in the boat and provided this live platform that you'd walk across that would monitor and respond to the waves. And we were sailing from a tidal port. So basically, once we'd left the port, we couldn't go back until the tide came back in. By the time we got to the turbine, I was hanging over the back of the boat, praying that I could get off for feeling so horrendous. This device reached out to grab the turbine and broke. And because of the violent motion of the waves, it smashed and a part failed. And the skipper just said, well, that's it. We've got to just sit this out till the tide comes back in. And I just thought, I am going to need some kind of hospital treatment if I stay on this boat all day. I have got to work out how to get off this boat. So we managed to find parts on the boat. I vividly remember putting this system back together whilst wiping my own vomit off these parts in front of me so I could assemble them, get this thing to work, and get off the boat. And when I finally got off the turbine, I remember standing there looking out the boat and thinking, this is definitely the line of work for me. This is absolutely fantastic. What a way to earn a living. Well, I can maybe this, you don't want to broadcast this, but I'll be on the phone to a customer at home talking about a particular job, and I'll put the phone down and then carry on with my day, and I'll turn around and my partner and my eldest daughter will look quite anxious. I said, what's wrong? I've just overheard that phone call. Okay. Well, how can you do that? But what are you talking about? This is just normal. And they're anxious and stressed because they've overheard what it is we've got to work on, what it is we've got to resolve, or the situation. And it just seems very, very, I guess it just seems very, very second nature to me, really. some of these activities have to be done in a certain period of time, because if the turbines are off for a prolonged period of time, not only are they not generating electricity, not generating revenue, they're actually aging very rapidly. And the mechanical components will become very, very worn if the turbines are sat there idling. They need to be running at close to full power in order that they can actually remain healthy. These turbines have got to do the 24 hours of Le Mans, 365 days a year for 20, 25 years. And they only get one day where they come into the pits. The gearbox might weigh typically something like 36, 40 tons. Some of the smaller gears in that gearbox are about the size of a domestic washing machine. When these systems, when these drivetrains fail, the turbines don't usually just sort of make a groaning noise and grind to a halt. There is an enormous, massive release of energy, something similar to a very, very large explosion, and then absolute devastation. The gearbox can be split in half. There can be debris everywhere. There can be secondary damage with the generator and control systems damaged. One particular case that springs to mind was I then climbed from the yaw deck into the turbine, and the first thing I noticed was it felt extremely hot in there, much hotter than it normally does. And I turned round and I saw the gearbox, and all the paint is flaking off the gearbox casing. And I immediately knew that that gearbox has been running extremely hot. And we took a very crude but effective sample of the oil, and the oil came out black because it's been running at a much, much higher temperature. Wind turbine drivetrains have particular challenges. They have multi-stage gearboxes, and each of those stages has its own lubrication requirements. And they also have their particular failure modes. And it's very important that they've optimized that oil for its operation and for the wear that they're going to anticipate. And so this is something that Castrol were very interested in working with Onyx, so they could better understand how their lubricants need to perform and how they are performing. The millions of miles are flown over the years to go to different wind farms and see these issues and resolve these issues. Maybe in North America, and you may be in somewhere like West Texas or Oregon, and you're standing on the top of a wind turbine there, and whichever direction you look in, through that 90 degrees, you can see 500 turbines. And then you turn to your right and you can see another 500. And some of these locations, sort of North America, maybe even Mongolia, there are thousands and thousands of these turbines that simply dominate the landscape. Certainly Mongolia was quite bizarre. That was several plane journeys to get to the airport, then a long drive to the nearest town, then you're driving in a jeep to the wind farm across a road that doesn't really exist. Again, I remember thinking, I am really in the middle of nowhere. There aren't many people that come here on a regular basis. When I got there, I realized that what I brought with me didn't actually quite fit. So you very quickly establish that you've got to make it work. You cannot just pack this stuff back up, get back on the plane and come home, because it's halfway around the world. This sounds a bit flippant, but it's very, very real. One of the main things that helps in this situation is put the kettle on. Make a cup of tea, and while you're drinking that, look at the situation. Look at the resources you have available and work out what you can and can't do. I think on that particular occasion, there was a cover or a flange rather that was different to what we were anticipating from the drawings and the photographs that had been supplied. I'd got some rudimentary tools with me and basically just manufactured this part in situ and made it fit, and then get the turbine back to a running condition in the evening. We can't just say, couldn't fix it, and the customer be content with switching the turbine off. I don't think it would be a sustainable industry if we had that attitude, really. We very rarely have a reliable phone signal. We certainly have an intermittent phone signal. I have three teenage daughters, one teenage son, a fiancé and an ex-wife. And I can absolutely assure you, it is blissfully peaceful when I go to these turbines. Regardless of the chaos or the crisis or whatever's going on there, it is relatively peaceful. It's quite spectacular. It's quite spectacular sitting on the top of the nacelle, particularly in West Texas, in the middle of the summer, absolutely baking hot, and you climb to the top. Beautiful view when you first get there. As I'm gradually working, I can start to smell this beautiful smell of home cooking. And I turn around and the technician is preparing some marinated steaks on a grilling machine at the back of the nacelle. And then at lunchtime, you sit on the top of the nacelle, obviously attached, but have this, you know, sort of steak, beans and potatoes meal, and you're looking out across the Texas desert. And you're thinking, I'm being paid for this. This is my job. This is absolutely fantastic.
You're listening to the Castrol on Mars podcast series. Everything we do in space goes into everything we do here on Earth. Castrol is proud to have over 30 years' experience working in the wind energy industry, with engineers and mechanics across the world. Find out more at castrol.com/onmars.